Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 65, and this week's guest is David O'Brien. David comes to talk to us about his projects, his new website, and working and doing panel photography at the same time. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Lensless Podcast. This is show number 65, and we have Andrew the Biscuit King Bartram over there. Hey Andrew, how's it going?
I'm going very well, thank you. And your good self?
I'm doing pretty good. This is a first for me. I'm having to sit out in my van
naked.
Do this podcast. I am naked, actually. Because
it's so damn hot in America.
I can confirm that by the pre-podcast picture you sent me, Corey. Yeah, we don't know each other yet.
Yeah, so, folks, we once again have a guest, if you hadn't realized. And we're joined today by David O'Brien. How are you doing, David?
I'm doing very well. Thanks, you, Andrew, indeed. And thanks for inviting me.
You're fine. You're not sweating too much, are you? Or maybe just through nerves?
Well, I might be, as I mentioned to you before. I'm wearing my son's PS4 headphones, so the proper big chunky pair of earmuffs, and it's pretty hot here in Oxfordshire, and I can feel my ears already going up in heat. So
there's nothing worse.
I'm sure, he'll want them back.
Well, look, if it's a choice between sweaty ears and sweaty something else, I think I know what I'd have: sweaty ears.
Yes. The ears have it.
So you look like a proper airplane controller.
I do. All I need is my PS4 controller, and I'd be thinking I'd be doing something else.
Nice. Cool.
So we're flying by the seat of our pants this week, folks, and not that we don't always fly by the seat of our pants, but I'm away for a big family gathering weekend in some posh country house. So I'm huddled away upstairs praying that the Wi-Fi is going to hold out.
Corey,
you've got a house full of kids as well, is that right?
Yeah, we have no pants on and we're sitting on the edge of the seats. So
Corey's naked in a car.
A van, thank you.
A van.
And to make Mike Gutterman happy, it's a Ford van.
Ford pickup?
No, it's a van.
Yeah. I have a house full of kids as well, but I can confirm they're all mine.
Yeah. What did you say, Andrew?
I was just going, I don't know, I'm just waffling like I normally do. What have you been up to then, my friend?
Nothing.
Nothing at all?
I've been shooting a lot of Instax because we have some family in town and they have a couple smaller kids. So they love the Instax. You know, they'll say, take a picture of me next to this or take a picture of this. Whatever, you know, okay, you know, boom, give it to them, and they just beam with enjoyment, and they got a whole pocket full of pictures to take home, you know.
Is that, that's the Instax Mini, isn't it? That's what you've
got? No, I actually stepped up and got one that's a little bit better. It was the Neo.
Okay, yeah, but that's Instax Mini, though, isn't it?
Oh,
that's
yeah, got the format, Mini, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
The Neo Classic. Yeah. My daughter has that camera. Yeah. It's nice.
It's pretty cool. It's got, like, a long exposure setting on it and multiple exposures, and you can do all kinds of fun stuff with it. So it's great for the little kids, you know, because they see, you know, you let them push the button, and they see it come out, and you say, okay, hold it in your pocket for a few minutes, you know, and let it kind of develop, and then they take it out and look at it and just, and all over, you know. So,
do you do any instant? Tempted by a... Sorry, Andrew.
I was going to say, do you do any instant photography, David?
No, I was kind of thinking that like a vintage Polaroid would be really good. You can get a lot of these things now reconditioned, and they'd sell the film, of course, for them. And I kind of never really got around to it. And the kids just seem to be getting older, and they just prefer the Instagram fix and stuff like this rather than me trying to get a picture of them and saying, hey, look at this little 3x3 square picture I've just made of you in a vintage look. So I don't know.
Dad,
pass them by.
That's so out of date, Dad.
The instant thing passed me by. All the years I could have got the really good Polaroid stuff, the peel apart stuff, and then Time Zero, SX70 cameras, all of that stuff passed me by. And I've told this story many times, but I got into instant photography in 2011, just after Polaroid had shut up shop and the project was started. And that's when I got the instant bug, and I've owned those beautiful SX70 cameras, Polaroid Land cameras. I've still got the Land cameras and some Polaroid instant stuff, but not. I got rid of my SX70s. Yeah. Never done it. I've never used it with pinhole though. I was going to. I think if the Fuji material, the Fuji peel apart stuff, was still around, then I'd have made something pinhole wise for that. But you can't get it any. Well, you can get it, but it's pretty expensive now. The Fuji stuff.
I was looking at it the other day, and it was like $40 or $50 for a 10 count box. And I was like, oh, I just can't do it.
Yeah, when I was in New York in 2012, I was buying packets of that from Adorama for $4 a pack.
Yeah.
Wow.
All day. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, David, I do like some of your photography. I like the.
Oh, great!
Just some of it.
I'm really partial, and I'm really drawn to what I call the light speed clouds. You know, so you have an image of maybe some little house out in the countryside, and there's a little mountain way off in the distance. And you have these streaking clouds throwing over it. And what kind of is that? Like, is that in a little abandoned house, or is that somewhere?
Yeah, so that's
there's the one in Scotland, isn't it? On your latest image, is that the one you're talking about?
It is, yeah. So it's the front one when you look on the website, the latest images. It's in the Outer Hebrides, so it's in its abandoned cottage, probably ripe for development. It's a much photographed cottage. If you put that into a Google search, you'll come up with lots of images. In fact, I actually own a copy print of that by a chap called a large format photographer called Richard Childs, who at least Andrew probably you know or have heard of. Black and white image. It's quite popular. But I love the kind of the pinhole. I mean, it's kind of partly what I enjoy doing is going to these kind of places, which I think have been probably reasonably well photographed, and giving it a pinhole treatment.
Sure.
In a kind of a landscape genre, I think is you know, it's not the first to be done, but there's not as many of those kind of images around, and that kind of image is kind of what I like about pinhole photography. I think is there's a real degree of kind of pre-visualization you have to think about, because I've got the moving clouds, I've got the sun in the top left. And so being able to bring that together and thinking what a final image is going to look like is always part of the fun, and why I think I kind of, it doesn't always work, but in this case, I was really pleased when I saw the nag come back.
I would be too. So
yeah, no, thanks.
Where are you located at? So everybody can kind of get an idea.
So I, if you want to put a pinprick in the map, I am Blenheim Palace in Woodstock, Oxfordshire. Obviously, I'm not living in Blenheim.
He's not actually. He's in the Queen's Royal Household.
The Queen's Royal. My mind.
He's Liz's butler, but he can't say that. Yeah. You see,
I live in one of the outlying villages just outside Woodstock. So I'm Oxfordshire. I'm pretty much bang in the center of England, which, considering I like seascape so much, is a bit of an inconvenience on occasion. But that's roughly where I'm at.
So Woodstock. So then you're into lots of tie-dyes and Birkenstocks and weird-shaped tomato plants.
Yeah, not quite, but yeah, it's a lovely place. It's the Cotswolds, essentially.
He lives close to Graham Jago. Oh, that's the problem.
I'm so sorry that you have to deal with that. But I guess, I think better Graham than Andrew, so.
Some might say so.
I think Wendy Chapman also lives up the road from me. I think met her.
That's awesome.
So. Yes.
So yeah, she cool. lives probably.
Have you not met up with her? She's a no, lovely lady.
Not yet. Hopefully, if she listens to this podcast, I'll chat to her about that at some point.
Wendy's great. We met up with her on World Pinhole Photography Day in Boston. She made the journey.
Yep.
And she's a bit like you. She's all over the place, isn't she? With you know, her. When I say all over the place,
you
I mean
in a good way,
geographically. Yes. I'm all
Andrew,
over the place
quit,
with my images.
Quit insulting
I mean,
people. This is like this.
I was going to say this
yeah,
is
I know,
going
it's
well.
It's a new record for me. I've insulted you within the first 5 minutes.
Corey, I mean, liking only around some the... of my images, and I'm being all over the place. Yeah, this is great. Good start, guys.
I mean, around the place, all over the place. Now you've flustered me. Now, all over the United Kingdom, you travel a lot.
Yeah, I think part of my past history really has been I did a lot of workshops in the UK, which you know were essentially digital workshops. And film-based workshops. And so that got me to locations. And that was, as I'm sure a lot of people do, if they're fortunate to be able to attend sort of workshops, is be able to, you know, do that as a perfect foil to the day job. And so every year, my goodly wife permitted me at least a 1 week off a year where I'd go and indulge in a workshop somewhere. So over the years, I've kind of built up a portfolio of locations, I guess, where I've taken my pinhole cameras with me, which is why you see the kind of images, I think, on the website that you do. And things like Northumberland and the northeast of England come up regularly because it's where we holiday as a family every year. So there's always a couple of, you know, days or mornings or evenings for good behavior when we're up with the kids in Northumberland.
How long?
Have you met up with Ian Burton and Andrew
Atkinson?
Oh,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, Andrew and Ian, we've met up. And I did a workshop with them last September. I thought I would show my support. And so we had a weekend together, which was great. And actually, some of the images on the website were taken from that weekend. That was a good weekend.
Cool.
And, they're great. They're great fellas.
Yeah.
If you want to follow along with David's images as you listen to this podcast, or indeed go back later and look, a new website which I'm very impressed with, which I think he launched today. Well, it's you did launch.
I
it today,
did launch
didn't you,
it
David?
Today. Indeed.
Wow.
And it's all the W's, filmpinholephotography.com, filmpinholephotography.com.
Yeah.
And I was, he's had some good feedback from the Lensless Podcast Facebook group people.
Yep, thank you very much.
Saying how nice it's looking. And we were chatting before we started recording, you've used Squarespace.
I have used Squarespace, yes, and as I mentioned, I used it on the basis that I thought it was going to be quick, which it is relatively, but
yeah,
saying...
That's who I use.
Yeah, but you have to learn... I don't know how long it took you, Corey, but you have to learn the architecture of how everything fits together, and once you understand how the rules work, it kind of is kind of straightforward, and then you upload the images, and then you find out that, you know, you're 6x9... isn't quite a 6x9 and it looks a bit odd, and then you reload and so it's you know, and being film only, I kind of went back and thought to myself, I mean, I started Pinhole in I think it was around about 2012 when I bought my Zero.
Nice.
So some of the images here go back to 2012, and so I wanted to go back and redust spot them and reprocess up to current liking and stuff. So, you know, it took probably weeks to do on and off. If I don't see another dust speck in my life, I'd be extremely thankful.
Yeah.
I keep thinking about a website. In fact, I think this time last year I was thinking about a website. But I've never gotten around to it. The nearest I got is just putting my pinhole stuff in a separate Instagram account.
I like the thing I like about it, about Squarespace, is you have so many different templates you can choose from. You can do with a traditional one if you want to like have kind of like a little e-store setup thing where people can purchase prints. There's templates for that, you know. So it kind of, you can really customize it to what you want to do. It just takes a little bit.
You never promote your website, Corey, when we sign off at the end of these podcasts?
Yeah, I haven't been, have I? Maybe I should. I don't know.
What's the address then, Corey? Because I don't know it either. What is it, Corey? Was it Pinhole Cannon? Or?
No, it's actually C in the as in the letter C, C Cannon. So it's CCANNON photo.com. Mm.
That's well. You should unless you're ashamed of it, you should promote.
No, I need to put a bunch of new stuff up on it. I've had that account for a couple of years now, and I've completely erased it and started over a few times, you know, so I need to go back through and do some stuff.
Is it all these Squarespace ones, are there tiers of payment, sort of? Can you pay more for more features,
yeah,
or
yeah.
How does it work?
I don't know. I can't remember, honestly. I paid the basic, you know, for the basic account, and you have unlimited pictures you can put up, and that fit my needs. So I guess, David, you're saying that I haven't looked at it past that point, so I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah. There's the whole e-commerce side of things is extra on your business side, mm-hmm. as well. So, you know, I've got a print section up, but I've got no proper link to, you know, PayPal or stuff like this. So you can't buy direct through the site. And I think, you know, that adds an extra £5, £6, £7, £8, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So it does get a lot more expensive. But I've just gone for the basic site. Basic site.
Yeah, that's all I did too. It did me just fine. So
I'll maybe have to look at it again. I don't know. in between all the exciting things I'm doing. So are you? Did I hear, David, or did you mention somewhere that you're on a break from some kind of law work, or have I just made that up? or did I dream it?
No. You must be thinking about this yourself, Andrew, I guess.
yes. It can't come quick enough. I've got the caravan. I haven't got the neck tattoo yet. Yeah. Sorry, it's tempting.
No, so I kind of, I'm in a very fortunate position. I've retired from my current job.
Ooh.
I'm a man of leisure, with no impending desire to go back and tread the working boards. I'm very fortunate and blessed to be able to do that. So at the moment, I'm spending time on my photography and my children, which is something, the two things which I probably haven't been able to do for the last 20 odd years or so. So I worked as a legal director for JP Morgan in London for 20 odd years, which probably nearly killed me in all honesty. So thankfully this is a bit of a break, and it's not that I, you know, won't go back to work again at some point. I probably will, but I don't know what that will be, and it won't be something like the city. So.
I think sometimes when you're caught up in that kind of, I mean, I've never had a job in the city, but, you know, I've worked constantly for 36, 37 years in the same industry. And there are times when you get so caught up in it that you don't see, other people in your family can see how it's affecting you, but maybe you don't see it for being too close to it.
So. I call it being institutionalized. You come to accept a way of living that many other people would look at and go, my God, what are you doing? So, I mean, I used to commute, for example, from Oxfordshire into Canary Wharf 3 days a week, which is a 2-hour each way commute. I had people calling me at Saturday night at like 11 o'clock at night and chatting to me as if it was 10:30 on a Monday.
Work day.
10:30 on a Monday morning. It was like, you know, you never had the view that you would say, what the hell are you doing calling me? It's the weekend kind of thing. I'm afraid that kind of working life was just not what it was about. So, and you learned that quite quickly. So I'm kind of glad I'm out of it. And I can focus on other stuff. And quite frankly, this website would never have been produced if I was still working prior job.
How do you feel though? Do you feel like, how did your work affect your photography in the matter of, were you always kind of rushed with your photography? Because when you were working, it was kind of something you did as a break. And now that you have a break, do you feel that it's harder to go out and shoot and make content because you have free time to go do it and you can go do it whenever you want? I mean,
psychologically, I think that's interesting. I think when I was, when I was working, I'd had the 1 week workshop, let's say a year, and there would be a real feel of needing to create, and come back with, images which I would be pleased with.
Yeah.
Now I don't feel the same way about that, and actually I'm much more relaxed. So psychologically, there is a difference. Do I think my photography has improved over the course of the last year? So I'm just beyond the sort of year anniversary from when I left work. Yes, I do, without a doubt. I think the time to be able to just feel more relaxed about the photography and being able to do ad hoc trips has been really kind of an eye-opener.
That would be a cool project for you to do, like some kind of compare and contrast of, this is the years when I was working and these are the years that I've just kind of, you know, had time to relax and do what I want to do, and see if there's any difference in how it affects.
Yeah.
So from when you were working full-time and you were doing these sort of week workshops and fitting in photography, I guess, as and when you could, what's the sort of pattern now for your pinhole photography? Are you, because you've got kids, presumably, what are they? Are they school age? Presumably they are. Are they?
Yeah. They're I have two boys, 11 and 15. And it's just easier, to be able to manage the time, and I can go away for, say, 2-3 day stints when there's a good window for that to be when it's open, and so I'm much more can just react ad hoc to what I think the weather conditions will be, where I want to go. I mean, I can't do Scotland from here, that's a 12-hour trip, but I'm much more ad hoc about my ability to be able to do photography, and that's really quite good. And I don't get as anxious around coming back with results. I've become much more accepting as to whether it's a good trip or a bad trip. And I think overall that leads to better results for me.
Yeah,
I think there's when you're so time pressured, there is a sort of nagging sensation, say, well, I've got to get out and make some images, and there's a temptation to just make pictures no matter what. You know, I've been away on this family break this weekend, and I was out by myself yesterday with large format gear and a camera obscura, pinhole camera, and I was walking around this Iron Age settlement in the Fens, because we're only 30 minutes from home, and I got out of the car, and I went to reach for my camera again. I thought, no, you know what? I'm just going to go and spend some time here by myself. I'm going to wander around. I'm going to look at the light. I'm going to look at, is there something I can do? I can come back another time, because I don't think the light was right. There was something about my time there, which was just saying, just enjoy being there. And the pressure was just, I just felt it lifting off and said, well, actually, I can come back here anytime. And, I've got this break from work coming up as well. So, sorry, Corey, you're going to be the only one working. And I can just, and there's a definite pressure. And I thought, no, there's got to be something about just taking in the environment. Is that me or you or David making that farting noise?
Let's take a break.
Okay. So you see, there's the thing, David. You need to get yourself a caravan now, so you can. And when you're ready, when you feel the vibe, you can just hitch up and shoot out of Oxford, head down towards Cornwall and spend the weekend, or down to Dungeness, some places that I can see you visit. And well, how about that? You don't fancy a caravan, small one?
Well, I kind of, you know, I don't know whether you're looking on the other pinhole photography group. Andrew Atkinson is, it looks like he's getting himself some kind of van.
There you go.
And I'm you know, quite tempted for that kind of thing. I wouldn't mind getting a van because it kind of would suit me. It certainly suit my life now to be able just to be able to go off and for the odd day or two and just not have to worry about, you know,
well,
sleeping
showering
and stuff.
No, I have a shower. You can. I've got a shower, hot water.
Yeah, these things are sophisticated these days.
But you're not suffering. Yeah. You should be going out and just putting all that behind you, just thinking about making photographs. You don't need to worry about.
I'll tell you what. My friend Ina Enternacht is over here. She's a German lady, and she does mainly Polaroid stuff. And she's on Twitter as I Am Ina. And you can follow her. You can follow her travels around Scotland at this very moment on her Instagram account. This is my shout out, called Walden on Wheels. That's WALDEN on Wheels, and that's Ina. And she's traveling over here with her partner. And they're touring Scotland. They come over every year. And she, with her own fair hands, converted this VW transporter van into a fairly basic but comfortable, you know, sort of camper van. So she has a bed in there and some cooking stuff and, you know, space to chill. And she's just touring around Scotland with a Polaroid camera. She has a Holger wide pinhole. And I think if she could spend her lifetime in that camper van touring around Scotland, she'd be a happy lady. But I do encourage you to look her up on Instagram and follow her travels, Walden on Wheels.
David, do you do much building cameras, making your own pinholes, or do you kind of just stick with the...
All this time
you've got on your hands, David.
Yeah,
no,
well,
to start.
I think, to be honest, there's going to be a lot of changes on that side. So I've taken the last kind of year, you know, without really setting any deadlines. I wanted to get the website done, which is great. I'm just going to buy myself a printer to be able to print some of this stuff. Making film hole pinhole cameras, no, I don't think I would go down that route, but I'm gonna get back into developing my own stuff again, which I haven't done since I was at university. Was the last time I did any home developing. So the next step, I've got myself the old Patterson tanks and all the hardware stuff. I need to buy some liquid potions for the film. So, you know, probably the next week or two, and probably the next films I put or images I put up on the websites or stuff will be stuff I've home developed, hopefully.
Cool.
So I'm kind of looking forward to getting back into that. I think on the pinhole side, making them, I mean, there's so many relatively inexpensive and excellent examples out there these days that that's probably not where my interest lies. I'm in awe of people who do that, some really beautiful things. But probably not my skill forte.
Well, yeah, I mean, unless you want to make something really big, if you're, hey, I want to shoot 11x14 paper negatives, you know, then you have to get into doing it. But
I do, depending on what guests we've got on, and, you know, we might have a guest on and they're making their own pinhole images and they're dreamlike and very sort of arty and ethereal. And I think, yeah, that's the way to go. Then I look at David's pictures he made with Route 66, you know, which I've done a bit of Route 66, and that's probably with your Zero or reality camera. And I thought, man, if you can make, you know, pinhole pictures like this with the reality and the Zero, I don't need to go and make stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So I tend to flip flop between wanting to make cameras and not wanting to make them. I think I'm going to make some next year. But when did you do Route 66, David? Because these are a great set of images.
Yeah, lovely. Yeah, thanks. When was it? I think it was 2014. and
year before me then. Yeah, so
yeah, and it's kind of interesting because I mean, well, it's also interesting in the point that the Pinhole Photography website, you know, I didn't choose to make it a bigger website to include all the film, color film, and digital work that I do. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Route 66 is an example where the Zero was in the bag alongside several other cameras. I kind of, you know, obviously, benefit of hindsight, I kind of wish I focused just more on the Pinhole, because, and I, you know, it is really a kind of an example of too much choice impedes creativity. Yeah. And I think I've probably found that over the years. I'm just, you know, this is like this would have been, this was a 2 week trip, so this was the only time I think during my working career I got 2 weeks off for good behavior from family. Mm-hmm. And you know, I literally took about six cameras with me, and I probably didn't make as much of it as I wanted to. If I had just the Pinhole stuff, I think,
yeah,
I'd probably have a website full of just Route 66 photos, this, which I'd be delighted with.
This set of images you have here are really nice, but the very first one with the car and the cafe sign, that's the best one. I love that picture. That's a great shot with the clouds behind.
That's very.
Yeah, that's a good. Yeah.
That's the Midpoint Cafe, and that was that's a.
So whereabouts is that then? Because I've only done that bit from Williams to Seligman. I think that stretch of about 100-120 miles, which is still on the old Route 66.
I'm gonna try and remember exactly where it is. So it's must be Midpoint from Chicago. Folks will correct me on this. But it comes more. We started in Oklahoma,
right?
And it seemed to come quite quickly. So it's way before Seligman and that kind of area, and that seemed to come quite quickly, because if it's halfway and you're starting from Oklahoma, then it stands to reason it's going to come quite quickly in terms of the whole route.
The one that speaks to me, having driven, you know, a few thousand miles on a bit of a road trip through America a few years ago, and seeing at times passing these railroad trains that just go on for miles, is the one you've got of the sort of the old Airstream style van, and there's some railroad cars going in the background. It's a shame I can't see them on the left side, but I can see them on the right side, and that just kind of sums up that to me. That picture kind of sums up America, because that's the sort of place that Corey lives in.
And,
in fact, that could be, you weren't at Corey's house, were you?
No.
And in fact, that's
mine's
Seligman.
Not that shiny.
Andrew, that's Seligman. So
is it?
Because I travelled with David Ward, as I've travelled a lot with him over the years, and he did a repeat trip the following year, and he said that the Airstream had gone, but it was pretty static and pretty knackered. But someone must have taken it out of the field. But that was taken around about 6 o'clock in the morning.
Wow. Well, there's been kind of a big interest in those old Airstreams here in the States, and people are buying them up and, you know, redoing them and traveling around with them and stuff. So maybe it has a home in it.
It's a shiny caravan, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, it's a shiny caravan, basically. Yeah,
yeah,
and I love the double exposure with Route 66 on the floor and the cafe sign.
Yeah, that's the other one I really like too. Yeah,
yeah, that is the that's the accidental tourist, isn't it? I mean, those were not, obviously they weren't deliberate. In fact, I was quite annoyed.
Right,
and then I thought to myself, do you know what? I see lots of multiple exposures on, and actually, I quite like this. So, I thought, well, hey, it's part of the history of, you know, an experience of doing Pinhole stuff, as you know, so it's kind of great.
I think you'll be speaking to lots of folks who listen to this show and others about, you know, the anxiety and creative roadblocks you run into with too much gear. You know, this is a well-trodden discussion, and I'm guilty of it as well. I take far less now. Very often on a, you know, if I'm going away for a few days on a business trip, who's laughing? Is that you, Corey?
Yeah, it's me laughing, yeah.
Don't you laugh? I'm now. I just take a pit. I just take my reality with me now. And
yeah, I'm wearing
if
down.
If I'm going away on a business trip, yes, you're gradually wearing me down. This weekend, so I've gone on this family trip. This weekend, I do have my large format gear because you see, that's the excuse. I've got the large format photography podcast to worry about, and then I've got the lensless. So I have to do those two things. But that's okay. They're both large format and pinhole. To me, they're both contemplative. You know, so 35mm, I leave it be, really. I don't do much at all. But one camera, or, you know, one pinhole camera and a road trip, that's got to be the way to go.
Yeah, that's my, I'm hopefully here soon. I'm going to start kind of doing the same thing like Dave was talking about, like an overnight or just kind of drive and see what happens. And I think I'm just going to bring a 6x6 pinhole camera and then just bring my Holga and a whole bunch of film, you know, and just use those two.
Yeah, I think that's valid. The cameras I enjoyed using most in the States were my Holga and my pinhole cameras.
Do you do any messing around with any Holgas, David, or anything like that?
Yep. Yeah, I do lots of... The basic 120. I think I've got the glass lens one, the GN.
Yeah, cool. I have a few of those too.
And I love the look of that. And you know, it's really great to be able to take all of this stuff out. It just weighs absolutely nothing.
Yeah. Nothing.
And I think that's what I want to do more of. Although, you know, the kind of the choice that we were talking about, I guess, is you could say, well, it's between like a digital camera, a film camera, and then a pinhole or a Holga. You know, I've got about 5 or 6 pinhole cameras. And so then you start to develop the choice again is, well, do I think I'm going to go 6.17? Am I going to go 6.9? Am I going to go 6.6?
Right.
And then you find out there's, you know, the choice of the medium is creating anxiety itself. So
I think if you're traveling, you could bring a 6x17 in another pinhole, because the 6x17 is one of those things where it very rarely pops up where you could use it. You know what I mean? Like it's one of those things for me anyways. When you see something, you say, oh, this, you know, like this will work right here. And that would be the only time.
Yeah.
You might only use it once a trip. You know what I mean? I don't know. I feel like that would be kind of like a,
I think coastal landscapes just cry out for 6.17. I don't have a 6.17 pinhole, but I shoot a lot of coastal landscapes with 6.17 back on my large format camera, and I love that. I was in Cornwall a few weeks ago, and that's that 6x17 format. I just shot loads of.
Well, Dave, you've got some. David, you have some 6x17 on your on your website here, I'm looking at, and you got some, these are all seascapes. See, I wish I had the rocky shoreline like you guys have, because this one picture that you have of, I don't know, it's 5 or 6 down. It's a little building over on the left, and then there's like a rocky shore that cuts across and goes back down to the far right, and you got this little bit of sea on the right and the little houses on the left. Those scenes work so good with it, you know, those.
That's the Andrew Maynard. That's the bathhouse at Howick in Northumberland, which is the ancestral home of Earl Grey tea.
Ah.
So Mr. Earl Grey would pop down from Howick Hall down to his little bathhouse here, which has, you could see a little wall there that then accesses onto the beach and the rocky foreshore.
Mm-hmm.
But that area in particular is. In fact, I've got another one almost at the bottom. There's a clearer picture of the bathhouse is an amazing thing. And you can rent that property as well. It's a holiday rental.
So the image on the very bottom of the parking lot with the houses is the other side of the houses a couple images up? No, that's maybe, is that?
No, so the very bottom one are beach huts at Southwold.
Uh-huh.
And then it's 1, 2, 3, 4 up is a better picture you can see of the house with the rocky foreshore.
Yeah, that's the one I'm looking at. So that's the one, a couple of images up from Southwold is the house at the top left and the rock, all the rocks.
Yeah.
Is that the one? With the two chimneys?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's very brooding, isn't it?
It is. Love that. It's a great shot. That's what I mean about the 6x17. It's one of those things that if you
coastlines, Corey.
If you have it with you, you're going to be looking for images for it. But it seems like whenever I didn't have mine with me, I was never looking at that wide of a thing. You know, I don't know.
What do you? Are you normally a lone pinhole photographer, David, most of the time, or do you have folks with you?
Yes, and I quite enjoy that. Well, actually, you know, apart from doing workshops. It's safe to be said that because I'm kind of coming from the landscape genre, the people I travel with, I've done workshops, people like, David Ward, those kind of guys, Lizzie Shepherd recently, their clientele are not pinhole photographers. So, you know, quite often I'm looking at possibilities where I'm just away from like the main group. So you can have the workshop experience, which I do enjoy in terms of that kind of communality of shared experiences and, you know, chat and stuff, which is good. But I'm normally away from the main group because subjects and stuff are probably a little bit different.
Right. Well, that's all right.
When you're wandering on around by yourself, use that as a way to kind of switch off and get away from the stress of the day job. And how do you cope with it these days? You know, you had a stressful job, and I imagine it used to be a bit of an escape for you. But do you...
yes, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I would find psychologically, it's a bit like, I suppose, you know, the nearest experience I think for this group is people who do darkroom work. You know, they might go into the darkroom at 9 o'clock in the morning, and then when it comes to 5 o'clock in the afternoon, they scratch their head and wonder where the time's gone.
Right.
you know, I used to feel that when I did darkroom work in my younger years,
and not even have a print done.
yeah, hopefully having a print at the end of the day. But you know, for me also, you know, the kind of just being able to switch off and engage in a subject, particularly things like seascapes, is really kind of wonderful thing, and it's time consuming, and the time just goes, and I you just wonder, hang on, where did that go? I've got to go and get back to the group, because it takes time to set up, and you got a meter for it, and you know, digital junkies these days, not that I have anything against them, it's a much more straightforward proposition, even if you're shooting aperture priority or whatever, whereas, you know, I like to get my Pentax spot meter out and do everything like I was kind of a traditional film photographer.
Right. Well, yeah.
And where do you find your work heading now? Are you going to concentrate on seascapes, David, do you think? Is that, if I was going to ask you what sort of projects you've got in mind, is it seascapes? Is that the sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, that's what, you know, I look at this and that's what it looks like. Seems to be my interest. I used to say, if you ever find me strapping my pinhole camera to my trolley in Sainsbury's and running up and down with my pinhole camera, then then you need to shoot me. And I suspect when I look at my stuff, it tends to be slightly more formal. There's a lot of wonderful work, you know, within your group and other groups as well, which is so much more freer and comes from a very different genre and perspective, which I think is great. And I think, not that I would necessarily move, you know, towards that. This is the website stuff, is the stuff that I love shooting and is what interests me. But I think I will also try something new in terms of new experiences. You know, people like Seb Andrews, you guys must know him.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, he has a fabulous eye for a mix of different landscape work and pinhole, and is able to marry the two of them in a way that I just think is fairly unique. And he's a wonderful and original photographer.
He is, for sure. And he'll sell you a camera quick, so you better watch out if you ever. Him and Mike Walker, they're both quick.
Well, Mike's been a bit quiet recently.
Yeah.
I think your work is. I've been trying to work out who your work reminded me of, and it was when I first bought my Zero 6x6 pinhole camera, which was many years ago, 15, 16 years ago, and it was the only pinhole camera I had for years. I bought a book by a landscape pinhole photographer, and it's called Lensless Landscapes.
Steve Gosling.
Steve Gosling, that's it. Yeah. And I've mentioned him before on the show, and I have reached out to him, and he did say he'd come on and chat with us, but we haven't managed to
wrangle him up.
To wrangle him, no. So I've got his book, and it's he's in this genre, isn't he? In the same sort of area as you, lots of coastal landscapes, a lot in the northeast, and you know, with an eye to a sort of traditional landscape, but with the pinhole photography giving it that extra dimension.
Yeah, and I've owned his book for a long period of time, and I can recommend it. And he's still selling the book. I mean, he self published the book, and I think he's still selling it, and fairly cheaply as well. So it's a good. But he never really did. You know, for, I don't know, 10 years or so, he doesn't seem to. I've never seen him publish another single pinhole image at all. So I don't know. I obviously can't speak for him, but I don't know whether he's still doing pinhole work. He does a lot of Olympus work. But the other chap who got me into it was a chap called Paul Mitchell. I don't know whether you know him.
Yeah, no. Why would I? Is he? I either follow him or I know his work or something.
Yeah, he's To Be Chasing Light as a handle, and he's Paul Mitchell Photography, I think. But he does a lot of excellent pinhole work, and probably was one of the main reasons why I kind of got into it in the first place as well. And he helped me out in those early days around, you know, which camera I should go for, you know, that kind of stuff. So it was all very much appreciated. And he does kind of similar work in a way of the genre, at least, but he does, he's a fabulous woodland photographer as well. And he's won, you know, Sunday Times Award, Landscape Photographer of the Year, that kind of thing.
Cool.
Well, that's possibly where I've come across him then.
Yeah.
PaulMitchellPhotography.co.uk pinhole.
Yeah.
Spirit of Light.
Yep.
Book on pinhole photography.
Yeah, I think that's just that's a blur book though.
It's blur book, self published.
Yeah.
So I'm just opening up his page now. Oh, awesome stuff.
Yeah, no, he's got some he's got some fabulous work for, absolutely.
So you're getting back into film developing. You mentioned darkroom work. Is that something that you might end up doing?
I don't know. That's a sort of. I don't have a room, I think, that would work for it quite at the moment. I'd love to do it again, but I think my days are, you know, although I'm not currently working, the days are so fragmented with just life and stuff.
Yeah. You've got busy family life as well.
And, you know, this idea that, you know, finding a 3-4 hour window where, you know, you could just switch off and know that you'd never get disturbed is, you know, I'm not quite at that level yet, unfortunately. So I think it's something I want to go back to, you know, people like, you know, one of your former guests, Andrew, you know, Sanderson, I think, you know, just unbelievably fabulous work.
A workshop. You've been on one of his workshops?
No, actually. And I did ping him to ask him where he was. And so he's a little bit further from me, but he's certainly on my agenda because he looks like, you know, I could just turn up and say, look, I want to do X and Y. And he'll just say, yeah, fine, we'll just do that. So I think, you know, certainly one for the future if I go down that route.
Yeah.
Who are you using to process your work at the moment? Do you have a favorite lab? in the UK?
Well, I use Peak, which has mostly been very good, although having a look at some of the negative scans, because I just get them to do the processing. I scan the neg myself.
Yep.
But looking at some of the negatives, I just think they could be a little bit better. And I think, let's just say, that's why I'd like to give the developing side a bit more of a go, just to see whether I could just control that kind of quality of the neg and that whole process all the way through.
I tell you what, I've started doing, started getting into doing stand development, and oh, it's so gloriously lazy. I love it. And it's practical. It has, well, a, it has a
is that
point.
When you is that when you want a 90-minute window, you just do HC 110 for a, you know, couple of hours or something?
I do. Well, I just do Rodinal, actually. Yeah, I just do a 60-minute stand, and I just, you know, let it sit. And it's horrible. It's horrible. I feel so bad when the urge to agitate, because it's been so ingrained in you. And to let it just sit there, you know what I mean? It's kind of like, it's taken me a little while to get past, like, I've got to at least just agitate it once, you know what I mean? Like, so I do like half an hour. I'll do like one agitation, you know, like just one up and down of it, and then let it sit for an hour. And that's about all my nerves can, I have to at least get one in.
I didn't get a great deal of success with stand development using Rodinal. I had some very uneven development in the skies, which can be an issue, but I'm going to try it again, but with a Cafenol formula, Cafenol CL with some bromide in, and I've seen some people using it, and very streak free results as well.
What would be the uneven development solution for stand development? Just an extra turnover here and there.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe make it semi-stand and give a bit of a tweak. I don't know. At the moment, I'm a bit loath to go back to it. Cafenol has many of the same chemical properties as pyro type developers. Right. It acts in a single way. So my learned people on the internet tell me, and it appeals to me because of the non-toxic nature of it.
I did some Cafenol a really long time ago,
yeah,
and I liked it, but I never I don't know, my results were always kind of flat, you know, like my negatives were, I don't know, maybe I just didn't put enough time into it to get it, but the contrast
maybe
level was really low on them.
I don't know, there's a lot to be said in, as I've said before and I've preached many times, sticking to a small number of materials and getting to know them really well, but I do. Cafenol is very much on my radar.
What would you recommend? So I'm using either Pan F or Delta 100, so fine grain. What would you recommend as a kind of a base developer?
Freeze of use, I would think. Some kind of concentrate to start with, you know. So
HC 110, maybe. I mean, Rodinal. I've done the stand with the Rodinal, and I've done regular development with the Rodinal.
DDX would work well. Sorry, Gary. Right. DDX would work well with both of those. And someone's farting again.
Yeah.
How do you find that Rodinal deals with the grain, Corey?
Andrew, have you been eating beans again?
No, it's gone now. I don't think. Let's just pray that noise doesn't come back.
David, I haven't used it a whole lot. I find it handles the grain fine. I've been using, you know, slower speed films like you have been. I don't, nothing over 100. I'm not, you know, doing 400 or anything higher in it. So. I haven't really have anything to compare it against as far as, like, you know, one or the other.
I would give DDX a try. It's fantastic with the Delta films, and it's really good with the conventional Ilford films. Okay. And you can mix up a liter and use it as a stock solution, just adding a little bit of time, or you can use it as a one shot.
Yeah.
And it is it is a great developer. That's a good place to start. Okay. A lot of people swear by HC110 or Ilford's equivalent as the LC something. Isn't yeah. They do. Ilford does a much underlooked or underused developer. It doesn't seem to get a lot of love. LC29, which is effectively the same formula as that Kodak HC110, gotcha. But it's less.
I like
also for slow Ilfasol S. I think you've used Corey, haven't you, as well? Ilfasol.
I did use. I did use Ilfasol, but honestly, for me, for what I'm doing, I've used a lot of different developers, and I really haven't seen any difference in any of them. I mean, honestly,
yeah.
Except for with the Diafine, where it's the two part compensating developer. A little bit of difference with that, but for what I'm doing with the pinhole stuff, I mean, you're not, it's really not going to be, I really haven't seen enough to be like, I think this one's better than that one. You know,
I think just choose one, David, and stick with it. Choose a generic fine grain and, you know, it could be an Ilfasol. It could be DDX you can use as it gives you a bit more speed. But, or try your Rodinal.
I do like the one thing I do like about the Rodinal and the HC110, I'm sure is in the same boat, is I like being able to only have to use 5 milliliters of it, and it's a concentrate instead of mixing up a gallon of it. Then you feel like you're like, oh, I got, you know, I need to do this and use it because, you know, if I don't, it's going to go bad, you know, and in that scenario. So I would recommend that.
And the Rodinal does, of course, everyone knows this. It turns dark brown, but it still works fine. So,
and I know that a lot of the guys on a lot of the other podcasts that they're always talking about. I haven't used the HC110, but they say it. You know, they go on.
Yeah, they swear by it,
don't
they?
It's
And I saw some lovely results today from on the Lensless Podcast Facebook group from Daphne. Is it Daphne Schnitz? I want to say her surname is Schnitzer. It's something like that. She produces. Is it something like that? Forgive me, but it's Daphne anyway. Anyway, Daphne makes some lovely work, and I've reached out to her. She seems a bit shy about coming on, but she was using HC110. She referenced dilution F for Freddy, which is a different dilution to what most people use. They tend to use that dilution, I want to say B or C or something. I don't know. So I don't know whether there's different dilutions to suit different styles of working, I think.
But if you wanted to, if you don't mind mixing up a jug of it, I like just regular old D76. I mean, it's just, you know.
That's what I use. Yeah. Well, I use ID11. And
or the Ilford equivalent. Many years. Even one of those. It's a good base just kind of to start with and see. Mm-hmm.
You won't go wrong, David, with any that you choose. Just choose one. I think a liquid concentrate when you're starting out is good. A fine grain liquid concentrate. Go on to somewhere like AG Photographic's website and they list their developers by, fine grain or Accutants, which is another posh name for edge sharpness. Fine grain is
I definitely recommend getting into doing it yourself, though, David, because it it kind of adds another level to shooting the film instead of simming.
And you can, it's a good excuse. Yeah. It's a great excuse to watch a Netflix video while you're doing it, especially if you choose one that has a long time on it. So I get through loads of episodes of Walking Dead and Jessica Jones.
Corey sounds like he's more agitated on his stand development. He might as well
have done
But then he might as well have done it in 6 minutes instead of agitating for a full hour.
Yeah, right.
I'm not completely sold on 60 minutes because stand time, because I've then got to go away and think of something to do for 60 minutes when I could just be developing a film.
I was looking at what Jeff was saying about shooting with the Holga and his pinhole stuff and the, you know, and with the stand helping preserve your highlights, and you know, and I mean, I do a lot of that same format, you know, of the Holga and stuff. Yeah. So why not? You know, I mean,
I think with Holgas and pinholes, where the depending on your workflow, it can be, you know, you're not controlling things in the same way as you would be with, you know, a lot of large format photographers would be looking at the highlights, looking at the shadows, and trying to curtail development. So, I mean, if you can use some kind of semi-compensating style developer, it does help to give a sort of foolproof negative.
I do like shooting with Ilford film, though. That's been kind of my go-to with the FP4.
FP4, yeah. Well, that's my one of my stock films. I'm just getting into funnily enough, Kodak T-Max 400.
Yeah. And I like HP5, and I like shooting HP5 in my Holga.
Yeah, HP5. I don't shoot anything else in my Holga apart from HP5. Yeah. In fact, in my reality camera at the moment, I keep HP5 in it because it's the perfect speed for these little hotel room shots I'm doing, because it allows me to, in most hotel rooms, it allows me to do a maybe about a 25-second exposure, which is just about the right time for me to move around a bit, you know, and create some ghost images.
So if you're doing stand development and you shot a roll of 400, but if you pushed an image a stop or two, does it still, how does it work? I mean, how is it compensating for that if you're doing stand development?
Well, stand, I think by the nature of stand development, you're using a very weak developer. Right. And so the areas that have received most exposure to light and therefore built up most density in the negative, the developer exhausts pretty quickly. And the areas that have received least development, like shadows, they keep on developing. Yeah. So no matter what you've done at the exposure time, because the chemicals act in this way, they take a long time to they wear out very quickly on the heavily exposed.
Well, no, I understand that. I just meant like you could shoot 400 on one frame and then push it two stops to 1600 on the next frame.
I think so. Yeah, I think the compensating developer. Well, it may not be ideal, but I think it'll cope with it.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So, what kind of film do you shoot with the most, David? Did you already mention that? You said Pan F, didn't you?
Yeah, Pan F and Delta 100 mostly on the for black and white. The last several rolls of Pan F, though, I had what Andrew might call as fat rolls. And I really I had to use a changing bag to take the film out, because I mean I don't know, I always make sure I wind on properly, but when I took the film out of a couple, that you could see there was an unfurling and
which camera was that, David?
That was with two cameras. That was with the RSS 6.6 and also with the 0.69, and it happened in both of them with the same batch of Pan F. And there was just too much spring in the film. And so obviously then when I released it, it kind of sprung back. And I got some very faded light leaks at the bottom, where obviously light was getting into the rolls of the film. And then I was having to crop a little bit just at the very bottom, but I don't know why it ended up that way, and I don't think it was a winding on.
I know Mark, the Three-Eyed Monster, he has been shooting the Pan F, and he says the last five or six or seven rolls he shot of it, all of his results is kind of like snowy. Does that make sense? It has like a really weird.
Maybe he should reach out. Has he reached out to?
Well, Netflix? I told him to. I said you should send him. You should see what's going on, because
it might
even be where he's getting them developed. That, you know, if you use a wash that's too warm or too cold from what you started at, you'll get reticulation, you know, and it'll cause it to clump up like that. So I don't know. It could be one of a few things. So,
but I find that occasionally with the lab that I use as well. So
that snowy effect.
So there is something around that, the chemical use at the lab. I'm sure when it comes back you get a very faded kind of snow effect. So I literally shove on my Imagionic noise reduction to try and diminish it in some way. Particularly if I like the image, I'll keep the image. It's all part of the process, and I'm not overly fussy by if I like the image, then the mottled effect. I think you can see it actually in the picture in Route 66 of Pops. That's definitely an example. Actually, if you go onto the website, the front page, you may not be able to see it, but in 6x6, the first gallery, the one with the big Pops service station, that one definitely had a mottling effect in the in the sky, and you can certainly, I can certainly see that visually looking at the image on screen.
Maybe that's something that I hope he's that's, you know, says something to Ilford about it, because I'm like, man, if it's been like 5 or 6 rolls of film, maybe, I don't know, it's expensive. Yeah. Plus indeed, paying for developing, but, you know, anyways, cool. All right.
So, Corey, have we had any communications from our fine listener base this week, or anyone throwing money at us in their foolishness?
Yes, we've had one. Joseph, do you know who Joseph Baker is?
Yes, Evil Chutney. My mate Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
He's a good egg.
Yeah, he chipped in. Joe. He chipped in.
In fact, Joe is going to be organising. I gave him a shout out a few weeks ago on the show. He's going to be organising this joint exhibition in Norwich for the Boston America and the Boston UK pinhole work. And he's still waiting. Apologies again, Joe. He's still waiting for me to make a print for him of the cafe owner who has the wall space for us.
You better get cracking.
So he can go in and talk to me. I know. I will do it. I'm really sorry, Joe. I've not done any darkroom printing for about 6 or 8 weeks, and it is right on my list of things to do, that print for you, because I've got a nice negative of the cafe owner that I took with the Holger, and I can make a half decent 8x10 print for you, Joe.
He's not really sorry, Joe. He's lying.
I am sorry. Joe's a good friend. We meet up pretty regularly. I don't think he owns a commercial pinhole camera. He makes his own.
Awesome.
We've not had him on the show. We should do, because he makes lots of little film canister pinholes, you know, and doing bits of calligraphy. And he's a good guy.
I'm definitely going to try calligraphy as well. I think that's
I keep saying that.
I'd love to be able to do that.
It's easy.
Yeah, I've got one. I've got one taped to my drain pipe.
Going out and doing it, I guess, you know.
Yeah, I've got one taped to my drain pipe. I'll be taking down in a couple of months.
Oh, nice one.
So Joe gave us a donation, did he? Yep. Bless him.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't need to pay us to come on the show.
Yeah.
It's fine.
All right. So how much do you do very much color, David? I saw a couple pictures. Do you have the same feeling towards color that I do, that just you have to kind of has to have these? I feel like I have to have such an expectation with color for what it's.
I'd like to shoot more color, and that's another thing on the list. I think the problem I had with not only pinhole work but the general film stuff that I did in Color Neg was really inverting and processing the neg in Photoshop. I don't know whether I'm colorblind, but I never found a system mechanism that I really could trust my eyes, where I would not have, kind of color casts and things. So I recently purchased the Color Perfect plugin for Photoshop, and that has been a revelation.
Nice.
So the image that I was kind of, there's an image under, it's on the front page of the 6x9. It's the bluey water one on the front page. That has sat on my hard drive for probably 5+ years. I put that into Color Perfect and I thought, oh my Lord, that looks great. I want to try and make something of this. So it just shows you how software and stuff and, well, probably technical ability, my lack of, can really put you off certain things. And I'm so happy that actually I found something that gives me a good base and much more trustworthy. So I'm going to shoot probably a lot more Ektar and probably Portra, probably 160 or 400 in pinhole over the future.
Yeah, nice.
Maybe you could share your experiences with that piece of software to the Facebook group, David. That sounds like the sort of thing that people
like to
want to hear about.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
And if you think developing black and white film is easy, oh man, you should develop color. It's even easier.
I've got a stash of stuff waiting for C41, and I've now got a stash of stuff waiting for E6 as well. I've not developed E6, but that's my next.
It's the same as the C41, just with an extra step, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. All right.
Corey, mate, I'm gonna have to go. I'm gonna have to go fairly shortly. So.
Okay. Well.
I'm happy for you to carry on, and or you can.
I'm almost out of gas.
Start to draw things up.
it's dinner time in the UK, and I think my family are probably looking where I've disappeared to. So,
well, David, if
my son needs his PS4 back.
Oh yeah, there you go. Let everybody know where they can track you down, David, and have a look at what you're doing.
Yeah, well, the website's up, and that was the next step, and you know, it's got the social media links on it as well. I've got this. I was fortunate enough to get the same handle on Instagram as my website address.
Cool.
So that was quite cool. So they both find me at that same address, Film Pinhole Photography. Thanks very much for having me on. Very much enjoyed it, chaps. Right, and I'll keep posting.
All right.
You do that. We've very much enjoyed speaking to you.
Yeah, it's been great.
That's been a pleasure, chaps.
Andrew?
Thanks very much.
You know,
yes, mate.
Anybody wants to find out where you are, they know where you are.
Oh, if anybody doesn't know where they can find me by now, and indeed you, Corey,
then
they're not. They must be blind or deaf or stupid or something.
This is where we plug Corey's website, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's right. ccanonphoto.com. Go have a look at it.
Letter C, not S-E-S-E.
C-C-A-N-N-O-N-P-H-O-T-O.
And come and hang out at the Lenses Podcast Facebook group, because
it's fun.
I did get a bit worried when the membership started going down.
You stopped insulting people. Maybe it'll go back up again.
Yeah, gosh, well, imagine how I'm going to feel when it comes next week and this goes live and it goes down again. So,
it'll be in just a few minutes. It'll be live.
It's been lovely. If you've, it's been lovely to finally catch up with you, David. So
no,
I
much appreciate asking to come on. I've really enjoyed it. Thanks so much indeed, chaps.
Okay, so we'll talk to everybody next week, and we hope everybody has a great week.
Indeed.
Okay.
Thanks, y'all.
Yes. Bye, bye now.
Ready, David? Are you ready to walk into podcasting history, David?
I am. I've not done one of these things before. Very exciting.
We've got to get this. We've got to do it quick, dude, because I only have a quarter of a tank of gas.
That's with the AC, is it?
That's what this is. But luckily, I have this big giant like 10-person passenger van, and it has two big ACs in it, so it's comfortable. I'm fine.
Don't you just get your kids to go and siphon some out of the neighbor's vans? That's what you lot do, isn't it?
Well, you don't want to go in my neighbor's yard.
Yeah, anything goes in North Carolina.
Shit, I've just spilled a bottle of water over my lap.
Oh, God, okay. Hey, everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 66, and this week's guest is Ed Doucette. Ed comes to talk with us about shooting 35mm, doing some color work, and shooting a bunch of dummies.